But we begin to find out that they were far wiser than we realized in many, many of these sins.
I don't know if this thing back again.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
now, like for instance, today Larry here found out that it was not wise to eat olives and cheese together. All right, and what is that telling us? If you go back and learn the composition, or what has been done, the composition of the olives, what has been done to the olives, and then the cheese, you will begin to understand why. Well, primarily it's because of the brine on the olives. That's way, 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 way too much salt. In fact, I don't think it would work out good with anything. Ripe olives that have not been subjected to brine, a very beneficial food. But salt is one of the most detrimental things you can put in your body.
We need some sea salt, Dada.
Sea salt can almost be included in that.
Okay.
14 grains of salt would be ookles and bookles for a human body in one day. And if you want to sit there and count out 14 grains, you can do it, but I'm not interested. Now, you get plenty of salt if you eat the herbs. You get all the salts and the vegetables. You get all the salts that you need. And I had to go off salts for my health's sake over 30 years ago before I took up chiropractic or any of these things. And I'm not subject to heat exhaustion or anything like that. You had another question?
No, I have a recipe for herb
rice. Any of these recipes. See, the herbs are just chock full of mineral salts. That's why they're so healing. And they're in the right combinations and in the right potencies. They're in various potencies, see, in the different herbs. Mm. And he asked about some other herbs. I mentioned the culinary herbs. Let's get back to that question. Now then, here is another book that I should like to see everyone get who's interested in herbs. This woman has traveled, she's a Jewish woman who has a marvelous sense of humor and so on and all, and she's traveled throughout most of the world. She has explored the herbs in every country. She lived with gypsies and learned their herbology. And it's just a marvelous book. And she also has a book for animals on this. She's world renowned about her herbal treatment and so on and all for animals. I've been wanting to get that book too, but just haven't had a chance to yet. And as Casey told you, it's best to eat what grows in your own area, because every area has its own particular vibrations that you have to sort of offset, and the ones that are very beneficial. And so what is grown and raised in your area helps you to, you might say, get in phase or in harmony with your area and function best in that area. And you probably have enough herbs growing wild out around here to just make you practically able to levitate instead of walk on the earth, see? You get busy using it. Oh, yes. One of the very best foods you can possibly eat are sprouts from alfalfa and beans. Now, the alfalfa plant is just about the best of any, because the word alfalfa is Arabic, means father of foods. Now, the alfalfa root has been measured as deep as 46 feet in the ground. They can go down and pick up minerals out of the earth that no other plants can reach other than a tree. You see, this is one of the main functions of trees, especially your pine trees and your pecan trees, that send a taproot down into the earth. They try to, or they can if it's possible, as deep into the earth as the tree reaches above the earth. And so they bring up minerals from deep in the earth, see, and they're sent out into the leaves, and then as the leaves fall, see, this helps to reactivate the soil. And of course, the trees have the function of helping to regulate the rainfall, too, and to help keep the air moist and humid for us, so it would be too dry and things like that. Now, alfalfa, getting back to this, because of this ability to bring up the minerals, is extremely beneficial to mankind. Now, alfalfa leaves, and we have some alfalfa in there. We didn't get packaged up. We brought it, but we hadn't gotten it packaged. If someone wants to volunteer to do that while we're gone, get these little containers, we're glad to leave some money and pay somebody to do it. I had about 75 pounds of alfalfa there. It was grown on the Red River bottoms in Texas. Mm. Organically grown, no spray or anything. And, no, you sprout only the seeds, and these are the leaves that we have here. But the leaves contain the minerals. Now, if you will use the leaves in tea, we put them in practically every herbal tea mixture for the mineral content, because they will blend with everything. I have not found anything that the alfalfa will not blend with. Well, yes, they're dry, but what we do, we soak. Yes, or you can soak them a little bit, see, and mix them in with salads, put them in your cooked foods, soups, stews, everything like that, Incorporate them like if you're going to fix cream cheese or, you know, or with avocado and dips, all such things as that. Just soak the leaves a little bit, you know, and particularly if you have one of these little Molyneux grinders, which I highly recommend to everyone. It's an electric. Molineaux. Now, we can get these things through Akin. Herbs and Things can get them. And if a group of you wanted to go in and order one, we could give you a discount on it. You can get them with the aluminum basket or the stainless steel. Of course, we recommend the aluminum. At last time I ordered any, the stainless steel one with a little blender attachment cost right at $20. You don't have to get the blender attachment. That would cost around $14. But it's so handy for small amounts and things like that. I definitely recommend the stainless steel basket instead of the aluminum basket. This will grind all types of cereals and nuts. You can make your own peanut butter. You can make your nut butter. You can make your flours, various grain flours and so on, all like that, with the little Molyneux grinder. And they're practically indestructible unless you get a bean, a hard bean or something like that, caught under the blade. Please stop the machine and get something and get it out instead of trying to make the blade go on around. Well, everyone should have at least a pound of alfalfa on hand.
Could we try and
yes. If you want to, that's all right with us. Now, we had to pay $2 a pound for it to get it. That was, and that we had to do that by buying it a couple of hundred pounds at a time in order to get this. Now, you can ask, check with Adana to see what he will ask for it. But I don't know. I know the source of this. I know how it's grown. I know there was no spray drifted over from any other fields on this, because this man upon whose farm this was raised is well known to us, and he has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres that he raises. And the Red River overflows there, and the ground is very rich. And like I said, you should see his cattle. They bring top prices, those that graze on there and everything. So we know what this alfalfa is. The alfalfa seed sprouts carry all the minerals that are necessary, all the vitamins that are necessary, except vitamin D. Now, we eat them from the time they're about, well, we don't eat them after they're much over an inch and a quarter long, the sprouts. And you can get different ones here to tell you how to sprout them. I won't need to go into that. Now, you can also sprout the beans, and they are extremely beneficial too, but the beans may not have as many minerals in them and so on as the alfalfa. You can be far more certain of the alfalfa than you can the beans. That's why, as a rule, I don't even fool with the bean sprouts, though we like them very much, unless we just want a variety. But I've yet to get tired of alfalfa sprouts, and when children will spontaneously eat something, like they will the alfalfa sprouts, you mix that with avocado or cheese and so on, and they love it. Just love it. Mm-hmm. The sprouts have those minerals as well, plus the vitamins and the enzymes that are active in the sprouts that are not active in the leaf, the dried leaf form. Now you remember in the Bible where King Nebuchadnezzar lost his sanity and he grazed as an animal in the fields for 7 years? He had to be a vegetarian for 7 years before he got his mental acumen back. You remember the story of Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego? You know, they requested to be fed a vegetarian diet instead of the wine and meat from the king's table, and the king's steward said, why, he'd lose his life. And they said, well, if we aren't in better condition, well, then we will do what you say. So he gave them the chance to prove it. And you remember when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the fiery furnace? It didn't even singe the hair of their heads, yet he killed the guards that tossed them in. And they saw a fourth one, a shining one, walking with them, their teacher.
Moderate on the American Indians, free up from disease and sickness, if they are living off the land and not on the reservation, they're restricted, such a thing.
The American Indian, before he got mixed up with a white man, was the most splendid physical specimen that the earth has known. Certain ones it was. You take the High Plains Indian, I'm really speaking of the High Plains Indian. And they have archaeologists in checking their bony structure, you know, the relationship of the bone length to the body, various parts of the body and the tooth structure and these things, they find that their bodies were just marvels. And of course we know the horsemanship of the Indian was just something phenomenal. Bareback.
Only topped by the Mongolians.
Yes, they did tremendous things, but I think that they still use halters and saddles and things like that. And your American Indian was bareback, and he could ride on the side of it. He could hang down on the side of that horse, and you couldn't even see him. That really took some doing. Some other sprouts that are extremely beneficial that very few people know about are the fenugreek seed sprouts. And fenugreek seed is one of the great cleansers of the body to use as a tea and as sprouts, particularly beneficial for the kidneys. And our kidneys have been so damaged by the soft drinks, by the dextrose and dextrin and so on and all and everything, and the artificial sweeteners and preservatives and so on, it's extremely beneficial to use the fenugreek seed. Now, if you're in using herbs, if you are brewing a tea out of seeds, roots, or barks, you must simmer those very gently for 20 minutes to get the essence, the medicinal essences. The leaves you steep for 15 minutes. So if you have a mixture of those, you do your seeds, barks, or roots first, and then add the leaf later if you're brewing a combination. After you have simmered those first ones for 20 minutes, then you bring it to the rolling boil and drop in the leaf portion of the mixture and steep for 15 minutes then.
Where in the world would you get fenugreek
seeds? Yes. Well, that is the national drink of South America. You've got to, generally I can stomach anything, but my tea is hard for me to stomach. It's a stimulant. It's not, it's beneficial to a certain extent, but it's more a stimulant than anything else. And probably. And evidently in South America, they need it. See, for functioning down there, probably, and the food that they eat. See, this has a tremendous effect upon the needs of the body, you know, the foods that we eat, the food combinations and the areas in which we live. You'll find that certain herbs, things like that, are more popular, you know, in certain areas. There is a certain element in mate that if you do not use other things, you tend to sort of get hooked on it, you might say, you're craving it. But it's not particularly detrimental. But I would limit my use of it in this respect, that there are other teas that we need so much more than we need mate, that use it for the pleasure you derive from it, but use it in a blend, see, or occasionally alone. I mean, be sure and use other teas along with it. Ginseng? Why are they against it?
I am against the
Why do they? Yeah, do they? Why? Do they claim it's an aphrodisiac or something, or a deterrent? Well, let me explain a little thing about aphrodisiacs, please. Some of them. People claim onions and garlic are aphrodisiacs, you know. So most people, when the body's energy is benefited, channel those energies in that direction. See? It's not necessarily so much that they stimulate the sex organs or libido or so on as the memory of a pleasant sensation, you know, and more energy to exercise in fulfilling that desire. There are some things yet that, yes, that do have an aphrodisiac effect because they irritate. And that irritation is mistaken for passion. Well, it's the passion to be relieved from the irritation more than anything else, as is demonstrated by the way in which this is used. Because love and the desire to procreate one's kind, to be the channel for God's functioning through another body, and by taking on the responsibility of caring for another soul through its period of physical helplessness and need, that is part of real love, and having the desire to blend oneself so completely with another in a union that is representative of the soul's union with God, and reenacting the old drama and yet the ever new drama of love and union and creation. Now that's real passion. But people just performing an act that is a muscular, neurological, pleasant sensation. That's the way most people act when they have taken aphrodisiacs, and that is, I don't even debase the animals by saying it's animalistic, that type of action. And I can sit here and state that I'm just as passionate a person as the next one. When I went to chiropractic college, one of the first things they said to us when we began our classes on the urological and genitourinary systems, study of that, they said, now, one thing you must realize, when you're in this class, you are a student hoping to become a doctor with the responsibility of helping people regain and maintain health. You are not a man, you are not a woman in this class. And I mean, they really laid it on us. They said that 99% of sexual desire is right here, the desire to repeat a pleasant sensation. And the more you work with the life force, and that does not mean that love lessens between husband and wife, but it increases tremendously when you begin to recognize the truth of these things and begin to use the life force and the divine force as it was meant to be used. Now, I was supposed to talk on the cell salts, and here I've been doing a lot of things, or rather using a pendulum. And do you want any more on the various herbs? Very quickly, for the kidneys, dandelion root, fenugreek seed. Parsley. For the heart, hawthorn berries to help strengthen the heart. And of course, alfalfa, as I told you, in practically everything. Chamomile tea for the stomach, eyebright for the stomach, eyebright also for the eyes. And any of the berry leaves, like strawberry, huckleberry, blackberry, raspberry, are extremely beneficial. Incidentally, one violet blossom contains more vitamin C than a medium-sized orange. One of these days, you'll be making your salads out of flowers. Geranium leaves, nasturtium blossoms, nasturtium leaves, violets, roses, marigolds, calendulas.
That's why you never see a sick wild animal.
Squash blossom. There's an old Roman saying that how can a man die when he raises and uses sage from his garden? The ancient herbalists, when they would pass an elderberry tree, would take their hats off and doff them to the tree in recognition of their great benefit for mankind.
So three of them are all right.
I think
your comfrey leaf is one of the great healers of practically everything. We raise comfrey plants. You use every bit of the comfrey leaf, of the comfrey plant. The comfrey leaf itself is said to correct asthma if you eat one leaf a day. And, you name it, and comfrey leaf will help correct it. It will absolutely seal, cut right back up, almost nothing flat. You don't have to take stitches or anything in it.
Yeah, I bit my tongue one time and weren't too given me this little bottle and I just put it on there.
Comfrey leaf is specific for cancer. When you crush, I realize when I'm saying these things, I'm really sticking my neck out. You know, you're not supposed to claim that anything cures anything. But when you know of people where cancer of the breast is just peeled out and dropped out after comfrey poultices were applied over a series of days, and the same thing's true of violets. Yes, we have them. I even have them as pot plants right now in my house to carry them through the winter.
They grow here.
I mean, I know they grow. They're not winter hardy. They will die down during the winter, but they'll sprout right back out in the spring. And comfrey. Now, it's kind of a woolly leaf to eat. You have to kind of get used to it, but we cut it up in our salads. One thing about the comfrey plant, when you get them, you may not know about it, of course, if you just order the roots, but I was told that you must reorient them, realign them, rather, with north and south, the way they were taken out of the ground. And the best plant that I got when I took it home, somehow it got turned around, and it just was the droopiest little thing until we changed it. It went from the best, biggest plant down to the weakest, and during the hot days, it would just all of a sudden, poof, the leaves would just be lying out limp. And I'd have to run out and water it, and it'd hurt. You just sit there and see the leaves come back up again. But I had to dig it up and turn it around. So if we take it up, when we take them up from anywhere and transplant them, we cut off all the leaves except the one pointing to the north, and then we know how to set it out again. And of course, you need to always have parsley growing, mint, chives and things like that. And around your plants, if you will plant marigolds and garlic, you will not be bothered with insects. And
I thought onions also helped.
But. Mm-hmm. But garlic's even more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And oh, it's one of the great cleansers. I put people on just garlic soup for stomach ulcers and garlic and cream soup. And you can go on a fast. For worms, you can go on a fast. Well, used to you could. Now it's not very wise. Eating garlic several days and then for 3 days. And then the third day, this is funny, but it has worked. You have a person lie down and put a bowl of milk there, and certain types of worms will just crawl right out, the stomach worms. You know? They're desperately hungry and they won't get rid of that garlic. It's sort of an ordeal to go through, but...
How long do you have to wait? Oh, once you do that with animals.
No, you have to just garlic. Because it has a powerful effect on the worms. I'll let you in on a little clue. If your body is not toxic, you will have no odor from garlic. And the longer you eat it, the less odor will emanate once you've cleaned the body. And now if you will eat garlic right along with it, why, that has a tremendous effect on it. And you see, garlic, this is one reason people formerly did not have so much odor. It's because they ate so much chlorophyll.
Oh, you meant
parsley.
You said if you eat garlic right along with it.
Did I? I must be so sleepy.
Parsley.
Yes, parsley. Eat enough parsley along with it. Mm-hmm. How do you get them to take it? Uh-huh, something like that. There's a dog just and it's down. See, they don't chew their food.
Cat.
Cat, all right.
It gets within 10 feet or something like that.
What you have to do with the cat. You have to wrap it up in little something, see, and you have to hold the cat. Generally, it takes two people and slip it down to the side of the throat. Right down his throat. Let's see, there was something else you asked about comfrey, and I was going to tell you about something else.
You started on the leaves, and you said that you
use
the whole comfrey.
Yes, you use the root and all. The root is stronger than the leaf, but you use that for tea and something. There is Dr. Kirshner's book on green drinks. The green juice or something like that, green drinks, that tells you how to use the herbs, the natural herbs around. Uh-huh. Tonsils, flush the kidneys. Gargle first with hot salty water and then with vinegar water. And massage with something on the throat, hot. First hot salty water, and then wait about 5 or 10 minutes. And then gargle with vinegar water. Oh, about a teaspoon of, well, a half a teaspoon of vinegar to a cup of water.
Apple cider vinegar?
Yes. Never let white vinegar come anywhere near the human body, and always use apple cider vinegar, preferably from a health food store. Well, a lot depends. If they were very sore in the muscle tissues, I always massaged with something that would help the circulation. But no, the next thing to do is to start drinking herb teas of something that will flush the kidneys. Because earaches and sore throats are associated with congestion in the kidneys and sinus and chest colds with the intestines.
Oh my God.
Well, which glands?
The tonsils.
I I'll show you something here about checking that will help to speed up your finding out what you need. You don't have to have the actual thing present. Now, for instance, if you have a problem, now like in this Herb book, it lists things, it has an index that lists the herbs separately, alphabetically, and then it has a list of symptoms or conditions. Now, for instance, you get something that you use as a pointer, and a soft lead pencil is good, or a little plastic thing. I have a little thing in my purse that you hold the hair rollers with that I use as a pointer. Now, and I either have the individual's picture or something, you know, that I'm checking, using as a means to check that individual, or the individual's own hand. And I point with this pointer. Now, here yesterday, they saw me check out someone for eye weakness. All right, it had here, I held it on borage, and I checked that individual. And I got the signal, yes, borage would be good. And so I went down through the whole list that she has found beneficial for that condition. And so that's one way you can check very quickly and then obtain the herbs that are good. Now, after you get the list of herbs that way that are good for you, for the individual being checked, then you take each one of the herbs and write it separately on a piece of white paper with a soft lead pencil. And you either lay it on the picture or on the individual's hand, and you check these various herbs together to see which ones you can use. First, I check them to see which ones give the best swing. And then I take those and put them together to see what combinations are most beneficial. And the combination that shows up to give the biggest, fullest, most active swing is the one that I use. And now, here's one thing. Oh, here are a couple of things about checking. If you're checking a person face to face, someone come here and let me show you how to have the person sitting squarely opposite, if possible, and they don't let their left hands or legs touch. Now, if they have on a watch, they must remove the watch because it has a magnetic influence. It sort of blocks the flow. You put your fingers on their pulse. And, of course, first you start out, I showed you yesterday, getting the vibrations of that individual. After you've gone through that, then you put whatever you're wanting to test. If you have an actual specimen, or in using the pendulum, it's called a witness. If you have the actual thing there that you can use, well, you do that. But if not, you write it out, the exact name, on a piece of white paper with a soft lead pencil, and lay that on the hand. Because, as I was telling you, the name of anything is most important. Now, one reason that this is best to sit directly opposite, because of the way the energies are flowing this way, and it's easier to get a very definite no when something short-circuits the flow and it's blocked. It just comes out better. Of course, like I say, it's just like driving a car at first before you got both hands on the wheel and your eyes are glued to the road, and you say, don't bother me, I'm driving, you know. But later on, you sit there with maybe one hand on the back, you know, like this. So there are things you can get a little lax about later on after you're really working well with the pendulum. And I may have been guilty of doing those things and demonstrating, which I should not have been. Now, when you say will.
Well, the will pattern is what I mean. Mm-hmm. In other words, is your yes response to an individual, can that somehow be closely associated with your will pattern response to
the same direction the pendulum takes?
Maybe not in
yeah.
But I mean, mm-hmm. The same type of.
Most people, yes is a clockwise motion, but not always. You just have to determine that it can be that for that individual. And. Let's see if it. Well, a counterclockwise means destructive. Now, if your subconscious self tries to tell you that a counterclockwise motion is good, well, you better have a little private talk with your subconscious self and threaten to take it out behind the woodshed if necessary.
Suppose he don't listen. Well, that's how he's done it.
Well, there are ways of making them listen.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, for those of us who are left-handed, this count likewise, we interpret it the same way as you said, presumably for right-hand people.
Mm-hmm. No, the motion should be the same. Should be clockwise and so on for left-handed regardless. The counterclockwise really shows that a person, as I mentioned yesterday, or did you hear that, that means a person has rebelled against something quite strenuously in a previous life. And counterclockwise shows that they are rebelling to an extent that is detrimental to their physical, emotional, and mental well-being in this world of in these universes of manifestation. And they do definitely need to get straightened out. So if your subconscious self is doing this, like I said, you need to threaten to take it out behind the woodshed. But there are means of helping to straighten this out. As a rule, a little image therapy and something like that, as a rule, gets that worked out very quickly. Dr. Chapman's textbook. Mm-hmm. And the biochemic handbook, which you get from the same company, that's the New Era Laboratories in Canada. I don't remember the exact address. Yes, you do. I gave it to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get it. All right. I had told them yesterday about a method of helping the eyes that has been developed by a Mr. Robert Hagman, who was a former Air Force pilot. He has really developed a tremendous system of re-educating the eyes, and that is even more effective than the Bates method, if you happen to have ever heard of the Bates method. And it helps, not only does the Hagman method help to correct the eyes physically, but it tremendously affects certain brain areas, particularly the ones that are becoming far more sensitive and aware.
So that would be good for everybody, wouldn't it?
Everything. It's a tremendous benefit to this. It's the Hagman method. Now, that cost, at the last time I checked, the last literature I had, it cost, I think, $65. Many people take off glasses. You know, the rest of your life, you're going to spend more money than that on glasses. And it can help prevent from ever needing glasses and all the other things that it benefits that it has.
Where is this available?
I'll get the information and bring it over here in a little while. It's 165 O'Farrell Street, room 400, San Francisco. Hagman System. H-A-G-M-A-N-N. M-A-N-N.
Is that better than the yoga exercises?
One cannot capably or really do the yogic exercises without being under the direction of a master. You can get in a lot of trouble. See, many of these yogic postures are contraindicated for certain conditions. Some of them, people will use the postures, you know, and they'll do one posture to achieve one thing, they'll do the next posture, and it tears that right down. So you just might as well not have done it at all. Darling, that has eggs in it. That's
what it says.
Well, it's angel food cake, and that's mainly eggs. I mean, when we specifically ask people not to bring anything with eggs in it, I don't, even for a birthday, I wish they wouldn't.
Is this your birthday?
No, it was Jesus' birthday. They have a one on there, but we're going to have to be a little bit more specific in our statements to please never, ever bring anything with eggs or meat in it in any way, shape, form, or fashion, even for sentiment or something like that. Well, if it's angel food cake, how can you make angel food cake without eggs? Because the egg white's the principal ingredient. Egg white is one of the most detrimental things that a person can put in their body. The yolk is not, the yolk, if you're going to eat eggs, it's far better to eat the yolk than it is the white, believe me. Because the albumin of the egg white is excreted by the kidneys, is terribly hard on the kidneys. Where, now, most people say egg yolk because of cholesterol, and just like calories, I wish people had never heard the word cholesterol. You can absolutely eliminate cholesterols from your diet, and your liver will manufacture cholesterol like mad. Cholesterol is absolutely essential to the body.
It is. The heart specialist,
well, they're learning. They're learning. You'll find some. I have an article. I have an article where they finally began to backtrack. A crawfish, as we say down south.
Myers, how many grams of protein do you think a woman?
It all depends upon the activity, the physical condition.
Myers, what's that for a reasonably active American housewife?
Well, to me, one of the most boring things in the world would be to have to measure my food out by grams. And I think that's one of the things that gets you off, gets you irritated and frustrated and everything else. If you eat, now a lot would depend on whether you're vegetarian or, you know, a meat eater. I try to eat at least a fourth of a cup of mixed nuts a day, at least a tablespoon of brewer's yeast a day, plus a good mixture of salad greens, you know, salad vegetables, some grain. We generally eat about a cup of cooked rice a day, and a baked sweet potato and a baked Irish potato. And maybe and some raw onion and carrot and radish. And you see how we do. We can run circles around most of you. I bet we've had less sleep a few months, especially the past 3 years. You know? And although, of course, it shows on us, and it's not the very best for our bodies, we realize that, but. And we certainly aren't mitigating the, overlooking the grace and love and blessings of our Master. But gosh, that's what keeps us alive anyway, is God's love. So this is God's love. And He makes, gives us all these things in His love, such a variety of things. I have found one of the main things, just like in, you don't fight the darkness, you turn on the light. That's how you get rid of the darkness. What is a shadow? Darkness is nothing but a shadow anyway. That's just some resistance to light. And the same, I find with my patients, I don't, as a rule, say, don't do this, don't do that. I say, if you do this, you will find your body so-and-so. Because when you give the body what it needs, it's going to function inside of a whole lot of other stuff you give it. Junk. The body is marvelously equipped to process and dispose of a lot of garbage. And these people that they interview, and they've lived to be 88, you know, and they drank a fifth every day and smoked so many cigars or cigarettes, they did it in spite of that, not because of it, and because in previous lifetimes they had disciplined themselves to build up a tremendously strong physical body, and the body they're going to have in the next lifetime, oh, that's going to be quite a different story. Very different story. You see, in the previous lifetimes, when they had disciplined themselves, they still had the desire. They had disciplined the physical body and repressed the desire, but that desire popped out on them. See? And so, you have to bring this thing out and look at it and handle it. You don't stick it back behind. And that subconscious, you know, has a little bag back there. It sticks things in. It peeks in every once in a while. It doesn't want you to see it, you know. And there are ways of getting in there, getting it cleaned out and aired out, getting the old dirty laundry washed and fresh and clean and sweet again. About what? I think Casey has some excellent things in that respect. things to do for that that will answer any problem you have. They can tell you about that for Pylea. Oh, one thing I did want to say about one's name. Over and over in the Bible, you find that God's name is mentioned and calling on God's name. And in the 91st Psalm, tradition has it, and this is in all your commentaries on the Psalms. I used to have three volumes set of commentaries on the Psalms that was given in the Greek and the Hebrew and English. And it tells this, that in the Hebrew tradition, see, great initiates composed the Psalms. They're tremendous mantras, right? In the Hebrew tradition, two cantors in the synagogue would chant this psalm, or else two groups of cantors. They would alternate the verses. But the last three verses, when Israel was living as they should, a heavenly voice would chant the last three verses. And those last three verses are, because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life shall I satisfy him and show him my salvation. And that 91st Psalm is quite specific for many troubles. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Now the secret place of the Most High within the human body is right here. And you are abiding under the shadow of the Almighty. The feet of the Master rest here, for the higher self, the God self. These chakras are but a reflection of the higher chakras. And that is your God self, that is your hotline to God. You abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Now in that country, a shadow was a thing for which to be very grateful, because the sun was so hot. Many times a shadow was a lifesaver. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. A refuge is a place you go in time of trouble, isn't it? And a fortress is a place that will send something out to fight for you, send something out to rescue you. He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In him shall I trust. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and the noisome pestilence. Now a fowler is one who traps birds, and the consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, is represented of the Holy Spirit by a bird, see. Anything that would tend to ensnare that and pull it down and harm it. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. That means an epidemic that, of course, is generally fatal, a pestilence. And a noisome means something that is very foul, evil smelling. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. Have you ever seen an old mother hen cover her little bitties, hover her bitties, you know? Oh, she clucks, and they run and run, and they get on there, and they peep their heads out, and they just cheat, and they just snuggle down, you know, so comfy. And Jesus said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how oft would I have gathered you unto me as a hen gathereth her chicks, and ye would not. And you find this mentioned over and over in the Bible, this type of protection. And remind me when I'm through with the psalm to tell you two experiences like about this. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day. Now terror by night, that's something we cannot see that is very dreadful. That can be getting hooked on drugs, you know, quite insidious. They don't realize what they're getting into. It can be cancer developing. One is not aware of it until it's, you know, right at terminal stage. Problems that are developing which we're not aware of, that become quite terrifying. The terror by night, not for the arrow that flies by day. An arrow was something always used as a deadly instrument. You didn't shoot it at something unless you intended to harm it. And by day means something that you can see. See, some situation that is very detrimental, of which you are aware. Now, for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, that would be more applicable to cancer. The terror by night could also apply to, we'll say, becoming an alcoholic. Any deep psychological problem, you know, that holds one in its grip that you cannot conquer. Now for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth in, at noonday. Here again, this is something threatening that of which one is aware. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Now, 1,000 shall fall at thy side. That indicates that no matter what is happening around you, and 10,000 at thy right hand, it emphasizes this, that we do not pay attention to the outer things. I mean, these things that are going on around us, when we are centered here in our God self, these things can be brought under control. Let's see, 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. The real, true inner self. We are, like Jesus said, in this world ye have trials and tribulations, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. And these masters set the pattern for us and show us how to do this. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. It is only in the physical realm that the wicked, quote, apparently flourish. We know that they truly do not win out. That when taken in the long range, overall view of things, karma catches up with them. In this lifetime, it may seem that they are flourishing, but they truly don't. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee. And we concentrate on this God self. Evil cannot exist there as evil, because we saw what evil is. It's just a poor imitation of good. And when this is straightened out, eventually this other has to straighten out. There shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Even anything so insignificant as stubbing a toe, they will protect you in. And I'll tell you more about this later. Thou shalt tread upon the lion and adder. The young lion and dragon shalt thou trample underfoot. Now the lion roars before it attacks. It is something that announces its coming. Or even as he just walks through the veldt of the forest, he roars. They know he's coming. Even if he's not attacking, he just lets them know he's around every once in a while. That's a problem that lets us know it's coming. And when it mentions then a young lion, that would be one, of course, that would be far more powerful than an old, decrepit lion. And when it talks of the adder in that country is a form of, is a member of the viper family that is extremely, well, deadly poisonous. And most of them hid in the sand. And as you walked along, then they'd rise up and bite you on the ankle, as a rule, there, and would be deadly. Now, it emphasizes that. It says, the young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample underfoot. Anything that has become so terrible as to be symbolized by the dragon, see, is just so utterly, teetotally powerful that one cannot withstand it. We'll say, well, for instance, a physical condition that has progressed so far, or a drug habit, or alcohol habit, or a habit of criticism, or being a martyr, or whatever. Now then, because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I answer him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me. No. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life shall I satisfy him and show him my salvation. Now what greater promise can there be than that? And Adana is giving you, see, a holy name of God upon which to call. the supreme Lord of the soul. Now, I'll tell you some little case histories about the 91st Psalm. It and the 23rd Psalms are called blanket psalms. They're good for any conditions, any circumstances. This one woman was a German. She was trying to escape the Nazi invasion or takeover in Austria, I believe it was. She was trying to get to the border and get across before they took over. And she had taken all of her money and valuables, jewels that she could, and she was on the train. She had been told about the 91st Psalm, and she had tried to memorize it. And so there they were at the border. The Germans stopped the train and entered the train, and they were going down. They were not taking people off at that time, but they were making them give up their valuables and so on, the Jews. And so she was so utterly terrified, and she was quite obviously Jewish. And all she could think of was feathers. That's all she could remember, that psalm. So she just sat there saying, feathers, 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 feathers. Like Pastor Bass, if they didn't even see her, she quite probably didn't look Jewish to them. She may have looked like a beautiful blonde German lady. The Lord protected her. Now, right over here in Dallas, Texas, in the United States, an acquaintance of mine knew a couple. The man was an alcoholic. Wonderful man when he wasn't drinking, but he just beat his wife up and everything when he was. She had gotten to the point she just felt like she couldn't endure it, and so this friend told her about the Psalms. She learned them, and she started using it, this one, and he went on the wagon, you know. And he just got along beautifully for months, and so she got a little bit lax in using the Psalm and then forgot to use it. She came home one day from work with her arm full of groceries, and just happy, you know, going to cook a good dinner. And she came through the door and on in, and all of a sudden something hit her from behind, and the groceries went flying, you know, and he started beating her. He's drunk. And so she couldn't think of anything but feathers. She started saying, chicken feathers, chicken feathers, chicken feathers. Stop it. What's the matter with you? And he kicked on the brush and said, I don't see any damn chickens around here. You're crazy. And he got tickled. And he says, what? Oh, crazy damn woman who was trying to lie. Stop. God has a delight for me to do it. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. It's a marvelous mantra. And then about the voice. Now, I had not heard this about the voice when this happened to me. This is a personal experience. When I was in San Antonio, Texas, during the war, going to chiropractic college, and some of you remember what housing was like during those days, particularly in a town where there's an army post and air force. Oh, are these our visitors? Hello. I'm Margaret Lay. This is my husband, Adana Lay. How do you do? Have a seat. I'm just giving a little personal experience. We've been talking about the 91st Psalm. Anyway, housing was just practically non-existent. I had bought a trailer to live on the college. They allowed students to have trailers there. But I had to take time out to have another baby, and so I felt like I couldn't. Three children and a little, one of them a tiny baby and a 28-foot trailer, that was a little bit much. So I found this place that was going to take over. And the woman wanted to stay there a little while. Anyway, it was a big mess. Her ex-husband had been captured and tortured and had silver plates in his head and all, just one thing or another. Anyway, he took a violent dislike to me, and mainly because he couldn't make advances to me. And so, anyway, I went to the hospital and had my baby, and came back, and I was saying, Lord, what kind of karma is this? What have I gotten myself into? I'm trying desperately to get my trailer back, and that really looked like heaven to me after that, you can imagine. And so I had to stay there, though, for a little while. I couldn't get a hotel room, or anything. And I had no means of locking the house. He had threatened to kill me and the baby. And so my other two children came back to be with me. I'd sent them to my parents during that period. My husband was in another city working. Well, I said, the 91st Psalm, what better protection do we have than the Lord? Well, I woke up one night and found my arm across my baby, and that man was standing by my bed, ready to attack. And the most glorious voice spoke. You cannot imagine the beauty or the authority or the power. And it said, you get out of here. You have no business in here. And I imagine he broke all records getting out of there. And he wouldn't look me in the face after that or anything. And immediately after that, I was able to get my place back. And then about 3 years later, I read this about the 91st Psalm. That when you attune yourself to the Most High by means of that psalm, how he gives his angels protection over you. But see, I learned that the heavenly voice that speaks through the last three verses. And I've seen many miracles happen through use of the 91st Psalm. God has not left us with that means. The psalms, see, the mantras that are given to us to use when we're so emotionally disturbed that we cannot think, you know, and we need help. We need it desperately. He's never left us to rest, but most of all, he's given us his Son, who are with us and who guide us and who leave a definite path for us to follow. Thank you. I love you. It has been so wonderful to be here with you during this time. The most beautiful Christmas that I've ever had. With just no words. Just no words. God bless you. Master's love and grace be with you. Lord, lift up his face and make his countenance to shine upon you. And grant you his peace. Now and forevermore.
Well, I keep thinking that I stretch my neck or I stretch the wire. Go ahead. You leaving no breath?
I'm going to talk to my little man.
Sure, go ahead. I'm glad you came. Well, better late than never. A wonderful man, Dr. Gallant.
Yes, he is.
I've known him a long time.
Haven't you? Yes.
Wow.
Can I take 10 years?
He's in Florida, I think, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. And you live here in Virginia Beach?
Mm-hmm, for that. I'm going to get something for your table.
Go ahead.
My stomach is off today, and I think a piece of dry bread would be better.
Go ahead.
You're leaving tonight?
No, in the morning. I'm leaving in the morning. I'm leaving about 7. See, it's a 6-hour drive to make Philadelphia. I'll be there for evening. I will lecture in the evening.
Maybe get some rest.
Well, you know, in my title, this goes on constantly all the time. So. Energy enters, the magnetic energy is enter your left hand. You see, this is the entrance, and this is an exit to the right hand. So, for centuries, men saw this from inside when he meditated. Now, the influx came in from the negative pole and went out to the positive pole. And by learning to relax, which is the basic key for transmission of any flow of life. See, God is life, and the creative intelligence flows in. But it has another entrance, which is the key entrance, the medulla. So by identification and by sensitivity of feeling, and you keep your hands like this, you are locked in.
Before we start, we have a few announcements we'd like to make. And Margaret, my wife, will tell you about them now.
About the work of the fellowship. I'm sorry. Information.
Well, one thing, over here on the table, there's some books that I've bought today, some used books for the library, for the fellowship. You might want to look them over and see some of the types of books that we're accumulating for our library. And I'm very proud of 2 or 3 of them over there. They're so beautiful. And there's 3 over there that were donated by one of the members here, the ones on rock garden plants, flowers for rock gardens, I mean it is, and the bulbs, and the ones on the stones. And the ones about Palestine, the 2-volume set there, we could probably sell in Texas.
One is a day for breakfast food, apples in the trees, and a cherry on the ground.
You're thinking of brown cherries. Cherries grow on the trees. Cranberries are what you're thinking. This is
cran apple.
That's what you were thinking about.
Those are cran apples.
Uh-huh. He didn't check it out for him this morning. That's some pretty drastic results. No, we don't go around checking everything out with a pendulum. But this leads up to one day coming of its own. It's the aggregate of the intelligence of the cells of the body. and it knows what's good for it, and it knows what's not good for it. Well, this is something that we won't take the time tonight to tell you, but if you all want to learn the use of these things and the proper use of them, we'll be glad to do that, but would you like to set up a class or so in some of these things?
Yeah.
All right. Somebody make some suggestions at the time. I can arrange my time to suit you. I can arrange my work. But of course, Adana's time is already scheduled.
Can we do a Christmas Eve? A lot of us.
I mean that day. Really rather save that time.
You want that time for silence and inner communion.
I didn't mean during the night time.
No.
Yeah. Did you say Christmas Day? No. Or Christmas Eve? Christmas Eve is really, in a sense, more important of the silence and so on than Christmas Day. Christmas Day is come, you rejoice, you
talk. Our dinner is going to be Wednesday night. So how about before the dinner for maybe an hour?
That'd be better.
We're
here for
dinner. At 6:30, then why don't we stay from 5:30 to 6:30?
Well, is that convenient for people? Can people get here at that time who would be interested?
I think. What about
after seven?
Well, people who work, that would be rather difficult. Well, how about once you're served and you're seated, do you mind listening to something like this while you eat? What do you think? Of course, we really got some time for fellowship.
We talk about women, so we don't want to hear.
That's right. I forget. People don't. I have to be able to do anything like that. That's right. Well, we could easily have two classes. Those who couldn't do it other than that time, we could go over in a little corner. Over to the house.
You have one on Wednesday for those who can.
Yes, let's do that. For those who can come at 5:30, we'll say that on Wednesday. And those who can't, well, we'll make a time when they can. We'll, because see, we can be over at the other place for a minute. Or down here, wherever. That's right, this will be before the dinner. Uh-huh. Well, so as not to take up any more of your time tonight, if you wish, afterwards, if you cannot make it at 5:30, see me and we'll make another time, okay? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Is there any question anybody has that they want to ask about the fellowship or anything like that?
Yeah, Stacy.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I imagine it will be by the time we get back. There was some repair work to do. He asked about the printing press that the fellowship owns. It's multi-list, 1250. And there's already a lady living in Tyler who has operated this type of press professionally, and Helen here uses one all the time. She'll soon be in Tyler, so expect to be able to really get that active when we get back. And to help earn money for those people who will be operating it if they wish to do so, because Tyler can use some more printers. And we had to go out and pay $20 to have those letters printed over there, and they weren't even edited properly and things like that. And so simply because the press wasn't operable right at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, will we be able to buy tapes for some of the different set standards that have been held in
various
parts of the country?
Yes.
Is that in the near future? Have
you made arrangements about that yet with any of them?
No.
Our tape recorder is being repaired. Different pastors who have donated a very nice tape recorder. Really, it's commercial quality. And it's not as large as the big commercial ones yet. It needs some minor, very minor repairs, and that's being done in Dallas now while we're gone. So when we get back, someone will Someone there is to do it, but I've forgotten who it is.
Tom Adelstein.
Oh, Tom's going to do that. Someone in Dallas will be doing that. So probably, yes, I imagine in
about
3 months anyway, those I imagine will be available. These lectures that Dana has done on the astrological symbology, of course, we hope to get in shape and bring out as a book really soon. There's just a lot more to it than he's given on, you know, this. And, I don't know whether he's going to...
Well, you know, last night we were looking at the Aquarian Age, and you know, Gemini is located at the throat on the right side, and the moon is in Cancer, right? What day in the year did man land on the moon? July 20th, 1969, that's Cancer. Gemini is man, and Cancer is in the moon. So how would it be impossible for man not land on the moon in the age of Aquarius in the sign of Cancer? So you see, the yogis are way ahead before other people know what's going on. By the inner astronomy, or the inner workings of the astral body, we know what's going ahead, back in time and forward in time. You have a master key within your own makeup, independent of the heavenly bodies, as Yukteswar calls it. He says, if unwise men make a scroll of the heavens, don't blame them. The inner wisdom is always locked up in your own body, if you would look inside for it. That's just one little clue of the Aquarian Age. There's so much we can't go into it. We'll try to gradually present it more and more, but we hope to put it into a big book to give you some good views on the Aquarian Age. But that's one interesting fact, that man had to land on the moon in the sign of Cancer in the Aquarian Age. There was no possible time allotted in the cosmic clock for him to do it. Now, from the moon to the sun, that's what they call the journey to the stars. One of the Indian prophecies on this continent is that when man begins the journey to the stars, it's the liberation of the Indian. The liberation of the Indian.
Of the American Indian.
Of the American Indian.
They have a number of prophecies. They have a number of friends, Cherokees and Navajos. When the first moonshot, when the first space capsule was put up, they were very excited. They thought this was the beginning of that time. And it turned out not to be. Of course, they were just going out into space. And of course, they were excited then about the moon. But evidently, it will be when they go
to the stars,
to one of the planets, or one of the,
planets,
heavenly bodies that we call a star. Planets are not exactly stars, the exact terminology, but as far as their prophecy.
How would they be liberated?
Well, they have records that date back thousands of years in caves. I guess only about a half dozen white men have ever seen. And they're sitting on these wells. They will not touch it.
You see, if according to your case, your writings, if we're going to have earth changes, by the time the earth changes begin to affect the planet, the areas where the Indians are confined to, the progress made by man in space would have need of those resources, and they will be the only people you'll have to buy it from.
Well, And see, they say that because of their greed and competition.
That's their liberation.
When they were in Lemuria, that was why they had the remnants migrated here, and they had to live in poverty for all these many thousands of years of punishment for that. And they know this, and they accept it.
Yes, the Indians are, they don't accept their lot as something bad. They know they have done something wrong in time, and they're working it out in humility. And their prophets or their wise men have already assigned the time for their liberation. But their liberation don't come as what we think in terms of a hero coming down from the sky and knocking out the so-called enemy of the camp. You see, the early Israelites wanted that against the Romans, that some great hero would come down and free them from the Roman yoke. But when the great liberator came in the form of Jesus, they couldn't accept that kind of a liberation.
American Indian prophecy states that regarding the cataclysm, that when Mauna Loa in the Hawaiian Islands erupt, there will be 90 days then prior to many cataclysmic action. And they, like say, when the first space capsule was put up, they began a mass exodus.
Yes, they sold out everything.
So businesses, everything, except the older people who said, well, our roots are here and our time is short, so we'll stay. They're moving back to Oklahoma. They have reactivated the campfires, the council fires. The council fires, they have reactivated them. They've been going on now, what, about
64, because
7 years
now. Their new chief is a very young man. It was interesting to reactivate the campfires. The fires, council fire, is down in a grotto in Talakwa, one of their sacred spots. And when they gathered to reactivate it, they went through their rituals, all the old men who knew the rituals, and it wouldn't activate.
It comes of itself. It's like bringing down fire from heaven.
So yeah, it would not come up from the grotto and where it is. And they could not understand, and they went through the ceremony. And there was a young boy in the group who shouted out, "You people don't know nothing about your religion. All your rituals are a mess of nonsense. The veneer of the white eyes have killed your love for God." And then he started to dance in front of the fire, and the old man says, "Well, what upstart do you think you are? Come and tell us what." But when he started to do the rituals, in a few seconds, out from the grotto came this flame, shooting right up. And they realized that he had to be the new leader for them. So they crowned him the chief. And he's gone into inward training. But they do have their rituals and they practice it. There are many, several of the tribes. The Kiowas, the Cherokees. Yes, it does. In fact, they have detailed markings on their artwork of the canals of Mars that they have recorded in their pottery. If you can,
and their jewelry.
If you to understand it, one has to be able to read what they're how they're hiding it as a code, passing it on through the centuries to their offspring.
Some of the scientists who have knew and recognized this on some of their work, they tried to find out how did they know these markings, you know, Mars and all like that. How do you know these things?
Well,
they travel via the Rainbow Bridge.
Yes. Well, the Rainbow Bridge is here. The Beatles call it the kaleidoscope eye. The yogis call it the eye of Shiva, or the god eye. The Masons call it the one eye on the capstone of the pyramid. But whatever I want to call it, it's still here, and you have to go inside to see it. The inner astral man has everything locked up inside for all ages. It's a matter of going in.
The other day I was reading in U.S. News and World Report magazine, I believe that's the title, that the weathermen say that due to unseasonable weather, they attribute to this 24 million square mile area in the northern Pacific that is ranging 1 to 5 degrees hotter
than it should be. That water, and that could only be from volcanic action. You see, that's what's upsetting the weather so. So things are happening. All this rock and roll music that we is actually having its effect on Mother Earth too.
That's a rock.
If you read in the Psalms, it tells about when the waters thereof roar and the stubble, and when the little hills skip like rams and clap their hands. What is that? The tremendous earth upheaval. Read that all through the Psalms.
You see, the Hebrew people and the early Chaldeans were great astrological mystics. And in all their wisdom, they hid it in certain symbols so that throughout the ages it would be preserved and men would come back someday to find it. And we're gradually awakening in this age to some of these hidden symbols. More and more. But in the also, there is the behavioral journey. There are two journeys going on in man's search inward. And the behavioral journey. We can know life symbolically by reading it through the symbols that are left around us. But how to behave while going through that journey, this is a different thing altogether. It is our personal behavior that gives us the liberation or leads us back to God realization. We have an environmental life, but we also have an internal life. The environmental life is like your markings on the road, the exits, the entrances, the detours, and so forth. But your behavioral life is different. You may be speeding along at 70 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you see a marker says, slow down, detour, and you're going to swear right away. You see, your behavioral life comes into a different action now. Don't blame the marker. The marker is there strictly as an indication of how the road is set up. Now, our reaction to how we behave, that is the thing we're going to be called to account for. Our behavior on the journey inward.